We're talking about legislation that would create stricter penalties for driving under the influence in Wisconsin. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. A group of state lawmakers has been working to get tougher laws on the books for drunken driving for a decade now, but these bills continue to face opposition. Are you a judge? How do you feel about how the court handles OWIs? What should change? Are you a prosecutor? Do you support first OWI offenders appearing in court? What do you think of our state's current laws? We're at 800-642-1234. Jim Ott is a Republican state representative from Mequon, representing the 23rd Assembly District. He's worked on a number of bills over the years that create stiffer penalties for drunk drivers. Representative Ott, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good to be with you this morning, Kate. On a kind of a chilly morning, I see Madison has set a record low for the date with 5 degrees. Their old record was 7. We've tied a record in Milwaukee at 9. So a beautiful full moon out there, but definitely a chilly morning. Good to be with you.
It is. It is indeed. Well, before we talk about the bills and what they would do, why has this issue, driving drunk, been such a policy focus for you in your legislative career?
Well, I guess you would have to say there's some people that think the laws are just fine the way they are, and it's hard to, you know, put a number on that. But I will say we have been making progress. It's been slow, but it's like the last couple of sessions we've got an important bill or two passed. In this session, actually today, we're taking up a bill in the Assembly. It's Assembly Bill 16. Which corresponds to Senate Bill 6, which was already passed by the Senate, and this would make fifth and sixth offenders have an 18-month mandatory minimum sentence. And we should be able to pass that today, and that means out of the 5 bills that I've mainly been working on this session, 2 of them will be ready to go to the governor, and I'm still hopeful for a couple of more getting done before the session is over. So we are making progress. It's just a little bit too slow. It's, you know, like you say, a dozen years or so. It's been a long time.
Well, back in January, you were hopeful that you'd find an ally in these bills with Governor Evers. How has the governor responded?
Well, I'm pretty confident, Kate, that he's going to be signing the 2 bills that we have ready, which will be, again, Assembly Bill 16, Senate Bill 6, and Assembly Bill 17, which was passed earlier by the Assembly, and then it was passed by the Senate last week. That puts a 5-year mandatory minimum for homicide OWI, of which there is no mandatory minimum right now. I'm pretty confident that there's no reason why he wouldn't sign these 2 bills when they get to his desk, and I'm hopeful if we get a couple more done that he'll sign those as well. This is really a bipartisan issue when you come to making our roads safer in Wisconsin.
Well, let's go back to Senate Bill 6. As you mentioned, you co-authored this bill, passed the state Senate last week. It's up for today in the Assembly. It says people arrested for their 5th or 6th OWI offense must serve a minimum of 18 months. That would be up from currently serving a minimum of 6 months. Has Wisconsin seen an increase of 5th and 6th OWI offenses?
Well, I think if you go back, you know, 20 or 30 years, there's probably less drunk driving today than there was then. There might be less drunk driving today than there was 10 years ago. So I think that probably, if you compared with the past, there probably are less 5th and 6th offenses right now than there were, say, 10 years ago. The thing is, there's still too many. There's still way too many. And the average incarceration for 5th and 6th, according to the Department of Corrections, is 16 and a half months. That's the average. The maximum you can get for 5th and 6th is 10 years. So the sentences have been much, much closer to the minimum of 6 months than they have to anywhere near the maximum. And I can understand that. You know, you can make the case that somebody who drives drunk a 5th time, they probably shouldn't go to prison for 10 years. But if they've driven drunk and been convicted 4 times and now they're caught and convicted a 5th time, there's obviously a pattern of behavior there that's putting other people at risk, and we shouldn't have to put up with that. You should not have to worry about driving home from work in the evening and having somebody cross the center line and hit you head on, and that happens all too often in Wisconsin. Oftentimes it's a repeat offender, but sometimes you have people that have no prior offenses that end up having a homicide issue or, you know, obviously some other kind of a crash.
We're talking drunk driving laws in Wisconsin with State Representative Jim Ott. He's a Republican from Mequon. You can join in. What questions do you have for Representative Ott? Which OWI laws would you like to see in the state? What do you think of our current drunken driving laws? What needs to change? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So let's look at this Assembly Bill 17 you mentioned. You authored this bill that passed the Senate last week that would require a minimum sentence of 5 years in prison for committing homicide while driving drunk. Why are you supporting that minimum amount behind bars?
Well, what I've learned in studying this issue over the years is that there have been too many cases where someone kills someone, a drunk driver kills someone, and there's no mitigating circumstances. I mean, sometimes it's been the middle of the afternoon, across the center line or run through a stop sign and broadside someone, and the family member who's been killed, I mean, it's just devastating to the family, and many times a relatively young life is wiped out. And I found that too often a time sentences are very light. In one case, somebody got, I think it was 11 months in jail in Huber release. Another time, somebody got a year, somebody got 2 years or 3 years. Now, I'm not saying that all the time homicide OWI sentences are that light. There are cases where somebody gets 10 or 15 years. And the thing is, though, if you can imagine a family that loses a father, a brother, a daughter, and the person who did it spends a year in behind bars and then they walk away, somehow that just seems like it adds, really is insulting to the family. It's saying, what is a life worth? And with no mandatory minimum, it is possible for someone to get a very light sentence. And that's the reason why we're looking at a mandatory minimum here, just because it seems to me, you know, the punishment should meet the severity of the crime. And killing someone while drunk seems to me to be a pretty serious crime.
Representative Ott, one of the things you've been running up against through the years on these bills is their cost. State estimates say the bill would cost about $15 million on just one of these bills. What would you say about the fiscal estimates here?
Well, number one, I think the Department of Corrections oftentimes overestimates the cost, because my purpose in introducing these bills, for the most part, and I say homicide OWI, we're looking at, you know, obviously punishing a serious crime and making the punishment fit the crime. But all the rest of the bills are really dealing with deterrence. I say this bill that, Senate Bill 6, mandatory 18 months in prison for fifth or sixth offense. I would hope that someone who gets a fourth offense, when the judge and their attorney says to them, if you do this again, you're going to spend 18 months in prison. Powerful message. I think a few years ago when we made fourth offense a felony in all cases, I think somebody with a third offense standing in front of the judge hearing, you know what, you do this again, you're going to be a felon. I think that's a powerful message, and hopefully a powerful deterrent message to bad behavior. So I think that if you've got to take into account that if we're trying to produce a deterrent, you shouldn't have as many offenders, and that's actually the goal. If we were just increasing penalties and it wasn't going to make any difference for safety on the road, I would say, well, is it really worth doing? The other thing, Kate, is an idea that I've been kind of throwing around, and seems to be a number of people might be in favor of looking at this.
Can you pause on this idea here? We're going to get this idea in just a moment as we talk with Representative Jim Ott about bills addressing drunk driving and the efforts of state lawmakers over the years to strengthen penalties. Do you work in law enforcement? How often do you pull over drunk drivers? Do you see a trend toward multiple OWIs? What should be done about it? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Representative Ott here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about legislation to make stricter laws around drunken driving. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Deterrence has been Representative Jim Ott's central focus, the one word that continually comes up as he's talked about these bills over the past decade. He wants laws that deter intoxicated drivers from ever getting behind the wheel. Have you ever been involved in an alcohol-related crash? What happened? Was the drunken driver held accountable? Share your story, 800-642-1234. And Representative Jim Ott of Mequon stays with us. Representative Ott, you were just getting to a big idea when we had to go to our break. Can you finish your thought for us?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I look at what it would cost to build a new prison, and the cost is, you know, obviously pretty incredible. But I also see, you know, there's plenty of abandoned buildings around the state, old manufacturing plants or buildings that could be, say, converted into a minimum security prison that would just house drunk drivers, which would, you know, again, I mean, you can make the argument maybe a drunk driver doesn't fit in the same place as a murderer fits. So have a prison that's dedicated to holding drunk drivers. It wouldn't be nearly as expensive, I think, as building a new prison. It also wouldn't be as expensive to staff. You wouldn't need the security that you have in, say, a maximum security prison. And this would give us an opportunity to, well, if we're talking about increasing penalties, to put people away for a longer period of time to keep them off the roads if they're a chronic offender, and at the same time, it wouldn't cost as much. So I'm throwing that idea around as a possible way of dealing with some of these high fiscal notes. And, you know, the other thing, Kate, I really have no interest in seeing more people spend more time incarcerated or having people pay higher fines. I would like to see less drunk driving. I would like to see safer roads. And the thing is, today, there are so many alternatives to driving drunk. Everybody has a cell phone. You have private taxi services. You have public transportation. You have safe ride programs, designated drivers. There's absolutely no reason to get behind the wheel impaired.
So are you going to formally propose that type of idea to lawmakers in the near future?
Well, the first thing I have to do is talk to people from the Department of Corrections. And like I say, I just came up with this thought, you know, a few weeks back, so I haven't really had time to look into it. But that's something I think I'll be doing as we finish the November session days and get into December. So see if it has any traction. It's not something that's going to happen tomorrow, but it is a possible way of dealing with chronic drunk drivers, and at the same time not having to build a new prison or overcrowd the prisons that we have.
Let's bring in Randy now, joining us from Madison. Good morning, Randy.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate you tackling this on the air, important issue. Thing I'm wondering a little about, you know, as you're getting to offenders with three and more OWIs, might expect that they're more likely to be struggling with an alcohol use disorder, a treatable condition, and I'm wondering to what extent resources to address that would be available under what you're proposing, or if there are proposals to expand on those so that when they leave incarceration, they're less likely to reoffend.
Well, very good question, Randy, and good morning, and thanks for calling. I'll tell you what, we have designated money in separate programs for treatment. And we also have, you know, alternatives to incarceration are available. Some of the counties have what you call drug courts, where a person, if they go into treatment voluntarily, they would have to serve less time. The other thing is, if we were to have, a minimum security prison that was just housing repeat OWI offenders, you would be able to make the focus of that facility on treatment, not just on incarceration. So yeah, that's obviously the other side of it. There's no question that alcohol addiction plays a role. And unfortunately, now it seems like more and more people impaired on drugs will be a problem as well. But in any case, you don't want somebody out there driving a 3,000-pound vehicle that can't keep it on their side of the road.
Randy, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Keith now, joining us from Beaver Dam. Hi, Keith.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about if somebody has a lock on their vehicle and they can't drive and they get into another vehicle that somebody lets them use, borrow, family, friend, is the person that lets them use that vehicle, are they liable for anything? Or as one, you know, because if there's a lock on a car, you know, they shouldn't be able to drive any other vehicle.
And when you say a lock, an ignition interlock device?
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. So I was wondering, is you know, yeah, somebody that knows that,
Representative Ott, and you're currently co-sponsoring a bill that would require first-time OWI offenders to only drive a vehicle equipped with an ignition interlock device. How would this requirement be enforced, as Keith brings up?
Well, and that is a very good question as well, Keith. And the ignition interlocks in Wisconsin are required for first-time offenders whose blood alcohol concentration is 0.15 or higher. That's about double the limit of 0.08. And any repeat offenders are required to have an ignition interlock. Until last session, there was a loophole in that law that it didn't say that you couldn't drive somebody else's car that didn't have the interlock. It just said you had to have one put on your own car, and you didn't have to have it put there until your license was reinstated. Well, people were driving before their license was reinstated, and they were caught, but they weren't cited for an interlock because the court order said that you didn't have to have it on until the license was reinstated. So that was one of the laws we passed, and I think it's been a big improvement. Anyone who has an interlock order on their automobile is not allowed to drive any car without an interlock. As far as someone being responsible, say, if they allowed someone to drive their car that didn't have an interlock on it, I suspect you would at least face possibly some civil liability if the person was involved in a crash. Whether there be criminal liability, I guess you'd have to prove that they knowingly let the person drive their car, but that's an issue that really hasn't arisen much. All I know is right now the law says you get an interlock order because of an OWI offense. You're not allowed to drive any car without an interlock.
We're talking with State Representative Jim Ott from Mequon. We're talking about legislation he's pushing that would crack down on drunken driving in Wisconsin. Your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Scott now, joining us from West Bend this morning. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I guess my question runs back to, we talk about habitual offenders and the fact that they're driving around after 5 or 6. Why are we even allowing these people to register a vehicle? It seems to make sense to me that we've tried everything else. Okay, we're taking away their licenses. We are, you know, putting interlocks in a car. Why do we even allow them to register a vehicle that they can then take off and go drive down the road?
And that's a very good question, Scott. And this issue has come up in the past. And at one point, a number of sessions ago, I introduced a bill that would say third offenders and more would actually have their vehicle impounded. And the pushback we got on that was, well, what if it's the family car and somebody else in the family needs the car to get to work? And what about the drunk driver themselves when they're not incarcerated, that they need the car to get to work? That was the pushback we got on that. And, you know, that certainly, I think, is a valid point to make. If you've got one person in the family who drives drunk and the car is registered in their name and you take the car away, you took it away from the rest of the family as well. But I guess my response to that always is, well, if you got one car and the whole family depends on it, then why would you drive drunk and, you know, take the chance of maybe crashing the car? That happens too. You know, people run their car into a tree. It's unusable. The rest of the family can't use it either. So, but anyways, we did try that, and it might be something to look at again in the future, but that's the pushback you get on that one. The rest of the family might need the car, and the person may need the car to get to work themselves. So that's that.
Scott, thanks for the call. Representative, you're co-sponsoring a bill that would extend the time limit of prosecuting OWI offenses. Current law says it must be done within 3 years. This bill extends the time limit to 6. Why do you think prosecutors need more time?
Well, and in fact, the bill would make first offense being a civil forfeiture, the statute of limitations is 2 years. Second and third offense being a criminal misdemeanor, the statute right now is 3 years. So we go to 3 years for first offense and for 6 years for second and third offense. And the problem right now is that sometimes people will get an OWI in another state, and the arresting officer doesn't have that information right away, and the prosecutor doesn't get that information right away. So maybe they got an OWI in Minnesota, and then they get an OWI in Wisconsin, and the one in Wisconsin is prosecuted as a first offense when it's really a second offense. And sometimes before that problem is discovered, the statute of limitations has run. So this would give prosecutors a little more time. The other problem that's arisen is sometimes a person will get, say, a first offense, and before that's even been prosecuted, they'll get a second offense. And if there's a delay in prosecuting the first offense, the second offense has to be prosecuted as a first offense if it's prosecuted first, because they don't have a conviction. So by putting a six-year statute of limitations, it would give prosecutors more time to deal with situations like that.
Representative Ott, thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, Kate. It's a very important topic, and like I say, I want to see safe roads in Wisconsin. I don't think anybody should have to put up with being, you know, slammed into by an impaired driver.
Jim Ott is a Republican state representative from Mequon. He represents Assembly District 23. Coming up, we're joined by Wisconsin's Teacher of the Year and what she's learned from other educators who hold this distinction. You can join in. Are you a teacher? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're welcoming Wisconsin's Teacher of the Year on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin selects four Teachers of the Year each year to represent elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, and special services. And then through an interview process, one is selected to represent our state in the Council of Chief State School Officers National Teacher of the Year program. Did you have a teacher who has made a difference in your life? What made them special? Have you ever nominated an educator for an award? What was their impact on your life? Join in on Inspiring Educators at 800-642-1234. Sarahi Monterey is in her 16th year of teaching. She's an English learner teacher at Waukesha North High School, and she's this year's Wisconsin High School Teacher of the Year. Sarahi, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us, how did you arrive at becoming a teacher? What led you to this profession?
Well, you know, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher when I was a little girl and I was with my cousins and we were playing school. I always just wanted to be the teacher. That was me. But really, my journey in education happened when I was in high school. And I graduated from Badger High School in Lake Geneva. And I remember we had a group of ESL students, and there were two teachers that were co-teaching a class, an English class and a social studies class, and together. And the first day, they wanted to make sure they pronounced the students' names correctly. And so I had had both teachers previously, and they asked me if I could be an aide in their class and help them. And even that first day of class, I'm the one who did the roll call, and I just, you know, helped them with different students throughout the year. And I absolutely loved it. And really, just in high school, I had always heard of the high dropout rates for Latino students. And myself being Latina, I just thought, you know, why is this happening? Like, I know that I can go into the field of education and make a difference. And that was really my motivator.
Is there anyone else in your family who's a teacher? Who did you look up to?
Yes, you know, my grandfather, so I'm from El Salvador, and my grandfather in El Salvador was a teacher. My father was also a high school teacher in El Salvador. I have an aunt who was an elementary teacher there in El Salvador, as well as another uncle who was a high school teacher. So I think, what, yes.
You had influence in your life, and people who you could look up to who had gone into the teaching profession and made a difference.
Yes, yes.
How did your experiences growing up in El Salvador, how did that influence where you are today?
You know, I actually, so my family came to the United States when I was one because there was a civil war in El Salvador. But we moved to Hempstead, New York, and there was a strong population of El Salvadorans there in Hempstead, New York. And I heard a lot about stories of the civil war and just experiences that my family members had gone through. And so I think it gave me a deep appreciation for the opportunities that I had here in this country. And something, you know, that was really impactful for me was my father, who, although he was a teacher in El Salvador, when he came to the United States, he had to learn English. He had to find a job. And his first job was at a recycling plant, kind of sorting out the recycling and everything. And he shared his stories of how he wanted to make sure he took advantage of the opportunity of being here. He learned English. He went on to college. And by the time that we went to that we moved here to Wisconsin, he went to UW Parkside. And I'll never forget being in middle school, and he was working full time and would come home and a lot of times still have to do homework. And I remember one time he came home, and he, you know, I hadn't seen him all day, so I went out and said, you know, I'm going to go say hi to my dad. And he was sitting at the couch, and what I observed is something that just always impacted me, that he was had a tape recorder, and he was playing his lecture on his class. So, you know, a lot of times we could think of English as a second language is a huge barrier, especially for him coming here at the age of 25, it could have been a reason to say, okay, this is too hard. But instead, he found ways to overcome barriers that he was facing. And so for that language piece, he recorded his lectures and would go home and play those lectures and make sure he had all of the notes and everything that he needed. And to me, that was just such a huge example. So my mother and my father really have been just an inspiration for me to take advantage of the opportunities I have here.
We're talking with Sarahi Monterey. She's an English learner teacher at Waukesha North High School, and she was and is the 2019 Wisconsin Teacher of the Year. You can join in. Are you a teacher, or have you considered going into education? What inspired you to become an educator? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Sarahi, when you arrived at Waukesha North High School and became an English learner teacher, what type of curriculum did you find? What type of program did you find?
Yeah, so when I first started there, we had a class. It was called Bilingual Skills at that time, and it was where students came in, and we helped them with homework from all of the other content areas. I do love doing that because it definitely keeps me on my toes, because I need to know what's going on with geometry, biology, all the different content areas, and I really enjoyed it. But we've been able to do some wonderful things at Waukesha North, where now, you know, I'm co-teaching some classes. We've also have grown the program where we have 2.5 staff members in our program. We have a staff member that focuses strictly on our ESL classes, and then we go into classes and do co-teaching. And so I get to co-teach English 9 and English 10 and absolutely enjoy that co-teaching experience, because I love to be able to really work with all students, right? And we do have classes where I co-teach where I have specific EL students that I make sure they have that access to the curriculum of what it is that they need. But I absolutely love that coaching experience, just having two people. There's so much more that we can do together, and the strengths that we bring to really make it a great class for our students.
One of the things you do is create a really safe and welcoming environment for your students. How do you create that environment?
Yeah, you know, it's all about that relationship building and really getting to know our students and being in tune with what their needs are. A few years ago, I got to provide some professional development for our staff on immigration policies and how those policies impact our students, because we were seeing that students were being really affected by these policies. And from that professional development session, I printed out, there are some posters, they're the Dreamers Welcome posters, and we have Teaching Tolerance has a really neat poster out of the school welcomes you, and it lists all kinds of different things of, you know, traditionally marginalized groups. And I set out some copies and just told the staff, I said, feel free to grab a copy, post them around, you know, maybe the door if you would like, of your classrooms. All of the copies, you know, were taken. And then I even got emails from teachers saying, you know, can you print some more copies of those? So I printed more. And it's really neat that when you walk into our school, you'll see those posters all over the place. And I'll never forget, I had a student that year who approached me and said, Ms. Monterey, did you see the Dreamers Welcome posters around school? And I said, yes, I did. So those posters do make a big difference for students. And then just creating spaces for students to empower them, to see themselves as leaders in our school. I advise a group called Girl Talk. TMJ4 actually came last year and did...
it's called Girl Talk, you said?
Yes, Girl Talk. Yeah, and it's just an opportunity for, you know, empowering young ladies. We talk about issues that affect them, but something that's really important is for them to also see themselves as leaders in our school. They have met with our principal to propose ideas, projects that they want to do. And so it's really neat that they can see themselves as leaders in creating change in our school. Just this week on Wednesday is it's World Kindness Day. And just yesterday we had a Girl Talk meeting. They created a display board for World Kindness Day. And they'll be there this morning encouraging students to commit to an act of kindness. And we'll put those up on our display board that we have. So it's really neat to see themselves develop a leadership skills.
Well, let's bring in Jocelyn now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hello. I actually know Sarai, and I am so proud of you. And that's my little one in the background. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize.
Hi,
Jocelyn. Her entire family and her just such an amazing contribution, not just to our country, but to our state. Thank you for everything you do for our students, Sarai.
Jocelyn, are you an educator, Jocelyn?
I work at UW, not an educator, but I work also with students.
And so you see students who really need that hand up and you help coach and guide them?
Yes.
Well, Jocelyn, thank you so much. Sounds like, Sarahi, you have a bunch of people rooting you on.
Thank you. It is really neat, just the support that I have gotten. It has been, this whole Teacher of the Year experience has truly just been transformational. It really has been amazing, and I'm just so grateful for the experience.
You've been advocating for tuition equity, giving in-state tuition for Dreamers, the undocumented students in the state. Why is this issue so important to you?
It is so important because I get to work with these wonderful students that want to have a better future. You know, when I first started teaching, I started teaching in 2002. And at that time, if a student was undocumented, there were really very limited options to continue on with higher education. And I saw what that did to students. I cried with students because of their status and just them feeling hopeless of, what's the point if I can't do anything in my future? And so in 2012, when deferred action was implemented, it was just huge. It gave hope. And so now when I see that we have that hope, but then, you know, tuition equity, sometimes it's so important because if students are having to pay out-of-state tuition, that becomes another barrier. And so I really, you know, we know education is so important, and if we truly value education, then it's important to, you know, eliminate barriers to that prevent students from going on and getting a higher education.
We're talking with Wisconsin's Teacher of the Year, Sarahi Monterey. We're getting takeaways from her tenure as she talks with other award-winning teachers around the country. Do you work with young children or teens? How do you create a safe and welcoming environment for them? Do you have a school-aged child? How do you feel about their teachers and their support systems? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to our conversation with Sarahi Monterey in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Wisconsin's representative to the National Teacher of the Year program. Sarahi Monterey is on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And she is an English learner teacher at Waukesha North High School. In recent years, she designed an English language learner program for Waukesha North High. And with a colleague, she started a bilingual parent group that meets monthly. It's a way for parents to give input for English learners. What model is working at your school to create a welcoming environment for English learners? What teacher helped you adjust to perhaps a brand new country or a new academic setting? Be part of the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Teacher of the Year Sarahi Monterey stays with us. You have been able to travel to conferences. You've had an opportunity to talk with other teachers around the country. What did you learn from those experiences that could help other teachers?
Yeah, this truly has been an amazing experience just to be with top educators from across our country. And as I've gone to these conferences, CCSSO has done a wonderful job of creating professional development for all of us and the opportunities for us to learn from each other. The last conference I attended in October is called Next Step. So as Teachers of the Year, we all came together and talked about what's our next steps. But within that, we had an opportunity to, each of us had to present to each other. We had 15-minute presentations, and it was just so valuable to learn from other teachers across the nation and the things that they are doing. And then just having the opportunities to have those individual conversations and learn from teachers. So, for example, the Arizona Teacher of the Year, he focuses a lot on implicit bias and restorative justice. And I had heard a lot about restorative justice. I feel like in education we're hearing that term more and more, but I never had official training on restorative justice. So he had a bus ride, and just sitting next to him, and I just said, hey, you know, I've never had official training on restorative justice, and this is what he does. It's his professional development that he offers. And so he sat down, we just talked about what it is, he explained it all to me, and he said, you know, when you get back home, shoot me an email, remind me, and I'll send you all my resources. And sure enough, I sent him the email, and I have all these wonderful resources that now I'm looking through and learning more about. So just to be able to learn from each other has been truly amazing.
You were also at the Google headquarters in California for Induction Week. What was that like?
Oh, that was very special because Induction Week was the first time where all of the teachers of the year from the different states got to meet each other. And so, you know, when you go to this, they tell you, like, this is going to become like a family. And you're like, really? This is really going to happen? And really, it really does happen. You know, we have these trips that we, you know, I believe it's a total of six that we'll be able to do together. And just the bond that we have been able to develop with everyone has been amazing. And Joel, we talked about there of imposter syndrome, you know, because a lot of times you think of there's so many wonderful things happening in education. I know there's so many wonderful educators in our state. And you get selected and, you know, you can't help it but to feel in question and say, wow, do I really deserve this? But they talked about owning it and saying it's okay. And yes, you do deserve to be here. And knowing that, you know, once you're a teacher of the year, you're always a teacher of the year. So teachers of the year will refer to them like I will always be the 2019 Wisconsin High School Teacher of the Year. I'll always be the 2019 representative to the Teacher of the Year program. And so it's really neat. You know, Google was amazing to be able to go and own that and then just grow, knowing that we were going to have this amazing year to grow together.
Sarahi Monterey is an English learner teacher at Waukesha North High School, and she's the 2019 representative, as she said, to the National Teacher of the Year program. What questions do you have about the Teacher of the Year program? Join in, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So this year is really considered your year of recognition. Next year, you start a year of service. Yes. What is the year of service about?
Yeah, so the year of service is then really looking at, now that we've had this year of learning and being recognized, and looking at what are areas that we're passionate about? You know, what is it that we would like to do? And every state runs their Teacher of the Year program a little differently. And in Wisconsin, we are fortunate enough that we have an awesome coordinator, Mark Miller, and we have a Teacher of the Year Council. And not all states have that, but it's really neat because the Teachers of the Year, we come together three times a year, and we can together then talk about, you know, what are important issues in education and how can we help to elevate teacher voice, how, you know, what are the different things that we are seeing. And it's also really neat because within the Teacher of the Year Council meetings, many times we'll have people from DPI come in, and it's nice that they want to hear from us and our perspectives. And so it is just really neat to be able to have that program the way it's designed here in our state.
Sarahi, I want to focus once again on DACA for a moment and deferred action for childhood arrivals and immigration, because the Supreme Court is hearing arguments today on DACA. And you started a group that held a fundraiser for scholarships for DACA students.
Yes.
How do you talk to your students, known as Dreamers? How do you talk to them about DACA and what is going on in immigration policy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think they know, like, I've had a lot of experience even with just family members and even my immigration story, and just sharing our stories and making them feel comfortable and saying, look, you know, it's the whole I see you, right? And I have one of my classes that I teach. It's a 12th grade class where it's focused on making sure that students, we help prepare them for their future. And in that class, we do a lot of meeting with students one-on-one and having those conversations of, you know, what are you planning for after high school and how can we support you to get there? And so a lot of times that's when, because we, you know, we don't ask students their status, but then in those natural conversations, it'll come up and they'll, you know, say, well, this is my situation. I always tell students, like, we're here to support you. And so we look for ways that they can still feel supported. And sometimes there are things out there that they don't even know about. So, for example, there's a Dream U.S. scholarship that just opened up. The window, I believe, was November 1st, where it opened up. And we've had two students from Waukesha North in the last couple of years get that scholarship. And it's a full ride tuition to, I believe they have like four schools where they can select from. And we've had those two students are now at Eastern Connecticut University studying. And so it's about, you know, looking at saying, you know what, yes, this may be a little bit more challenge or situation may be different, but let's look at how we can support you so that you can reach your goal. And, you know, like just helping them see that there is hope and just that we're there to support them so that they can accomplish their goals.
Let's bring in Mary now in Whitewater. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, hi, Sarai.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
What timing? I can't believe I turned the radio on and there you are. So we used to work together in Whitewater and we remain friends. And Sarai is obviously an incredible teacher. And I think one of the keys to her ability to change lives is the relationships, and she connects so well with students. And I mean, we have students who we've known their whole lives because of some of the things that, you know, she was willing to do and conversations she had and experiences that were provided for them. So I'm so happy.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Mary and I have great memories together. We even used to take students camping, and for a lot of them, it was their first experience camping. And seriously, those are just wonderful memories. So it's great to hear from you, Mary.
Wow. Camping. So is that a tradition you would carry on, Sarai?
You know, I would love to bring camping to Waukesha because I have not done that here with students yet. So that would be awesome because, you know, actually, it's interesting that Mary calls in, and I just love that she did, because just a couple of weeks ago, I was at a pumpkin farm, and I ran into, like, five students who Mary and I worked with together, and we used to take on those camping trips. And when I see students, we always talk about those trips, and they always talk about how they'll never forget it. And I've had students who have told me they would go on those trips, and then now they do that with their families. They have family now, and they take them camping, you know, and they had never experienced that before. So I would love to, that's something I need to start up again.
Well, yeah. Sarai, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be speaking with you this morning.
Sarai Monterey is an English learner teacher at Waukesha North High School. She is the 2019 representative to the National Teacher of the Year program. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.